Hampshire Public Radio News. It's now 9:06.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and here are some of the voices from this week's top news stories.
The result was the same as every other casino bill ever taken up by the New Hampshire House, but the tally produced a gasp. The 172-172 tie was broken by Deputy House Speaker Neda Cain.
And the chair votes in the affirmative.
There are abusers who go unrecognized. There are victims and children who may not realize the danger they are in and thus do not seek help in breaking a dangerous pattern of violence.
It's spectacular. I can't say anything more than that. It exceeds my most optimistic expectations about how well we would be able to do, and so I feel really proud to be part of an effort that helped sign this many people up for something that I think is really going to make a difference in their lives.
The vast majority are very responsible and take good care of their customers, but there is that small percentage that, for one reason or another, is having a problem, and we just want to put them on record to know that here in New Hampshire there are consumer protections and we're going to do all we can to protect their customers.
Basic, it was designed to be sort of an introductory language that would bring people into computing by a mathematician, John Kemeny, who went on to become Dartmouth College president and some would argue is the most influential mathematician with any New Hampshire connection.
From the top, that was NHPR senior political reporter Josh Rogers recapping a casino bill's very narrow defeat in the House. Democratic Representative Shannon Chandley of Amherst on behalf of Joshua's Law, which makes domestic violence a specific crime. Karen Hicks of the group Covering New Hampshire on new Affordable Care Act enrollment numbers showing 40,000 Granite Staters signed up. Democratic Representative Steve Shurtleff on a bill designed to protect home heating oil customers. And David Brook, science reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, on Dartmouth's role in creating the computer language, BASIC, which this year celebrates its 50th birthday. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you as we examine these and other stories, including a new Gallup survey that shows most Granite Staters are very happy to live here. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests for this week's roundup are Kathleen Ronayne, State House and politics reporter for the Concord Monitor. Kathleen, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Oh, it's great seeing you, Laura.
And also with us, Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks for hosting for me last week and welcome back.
Sure, it's my pleasure. Good morning.
Well, all of you, let's start off with that casino vote. And Kathleen Ronayne, I'm wondering if we had a dollar every time we talked about casinos, we'd all be quite wealthy. What did this bill look like? What were some of the particulars? Because each one does have its own character.
Well, this is the two casino bill that started in the Senate. So obviously the biggest difference is it's two casinos, not one, a larger and smaller one, I think with initial licensing fees of $80 and $40 million. This bill also included $25 million in revenue sharing that would go back to cities and towns, which some people saw as a sweetener to try and bring a few extra people on board to support the bill. It had almost all of the regulations that the House's one casino bill had. A role for the Attorney General, enforcement provisions, all drawn up last year by the Gaming Regulatory Oversight Authority, I think is the name. So it was a huge bill. I mean, it combined a lot of what you could maybe say were the best portions of a variety of casino bills to try and get one that would finally get enough supporters on board. Obviously, as we heard from Josh at the beginning, it was a 172-172 tie, which was broken by the deputy speaker. So she voted in favor of killing the bill. But what's interesting is that it could come back.
I saw that in your story, Kathleen. I was stunned by that. Yeah.
Yep. On any bill, any representative who's on the prevailing side, so in this case, anyone who voted to kill it, can actually file for reconsideration, which means they could file to bring the bill back. And somebody did that right after the vote. So next week, what's going to happen is they're going to take a vote on whether they want to reconsider it. So if a majority of people say, yes, we want to reconsider it, we'll have the debate all over again. But if a majority of people say, no, we don't want to reconsider it, then it's done. So likely, I would say that this is facing a very uphill battle to get to passage. I don't want to say it's not going to pass.
Right.
But,
well, 172 to 172, and as others have pointed out, you know, partly these votes depend on just who shows up. It's a big house.
That's true. I think there were 42 recorded absences. Of course, there are some people who don't record the absences and just don't show up. And I think by my count, less than half of those people were casino supporters, but not by much. But a lot of lawmakers usually think that the absences tend to cancel each other out. So we'll see. There were also some people who voted against the motion to kill the bill because they wanted to hear a variety of amendments that were going to get tacked on, and may not have ultimately voted in favor of the bill. So it's a guessing game at this point. It really is. I mean, you can look at the vote breakdowns. You can try to decide who might vote one way or the other. But I think as we saw Wednesday, you really don't know what's going to happen. You can guess all you want, but it at this point, anything could happen with this bill.
Well, it was stunning. 172 to 172, a tie broken, as you say, Kathleen, by the deputy speaker. Jeff, what's your takeaway from this?
It's really interesting because you obviously was the closeness was mind-blowing, actually. But I know that the opponents of casino gambling were taken aback by how close it was because, actually, you know, if you talk to any of them, they were very confident that, you know, well, sure, no problem.
Well, the house has always been the graveyard for these bills,
always
so
been.
To speak.
Never,
yeah.
Never has voted for it. This is as close as possible. Now, there's a couple of issues that Kathleen mentioned, the $25 million revenue sharing. That helped bring some reps over to vote to support it. And the other thing that really I think has kind of made the issue a little more cloudy was this Medicare enhancement tax problem, which was declared unconstitutional, and the state has it's got a huge hole in the budget. And I think some reps who maybe in past times would have been against casinos, no doubt about it, we're starting to have second thoughts saying, we have this huge budget hole. What are we going to do? Here's some money.
Well,
which is the old-fashioned way of New Hampshire doing it. Let's go look for those nickels and dimes in the sofa cushions.
Well, and just backing up, and we did a little segment on the Medicaid enhancement tax yesterday, Jeff. But just for folks who might have missed that, this is a hospital tax that has been declared unconstitutional by two lower courts, potentially blowing a hole in the state budget. Yeah. But the Supreme Court hasn't weighed in yet on this.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's still.
But people are nervous.
But they're nervous. And if you heard some of the debate, there were Neil Kirk, conservative Republican, and I think it was Mary Jane Wallner, who's a Democrat, were both saying, you know, this is all being blown out of proportion. They're both against casinos. They say this is not as big an issue as you think. It's under control. It's all pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, you know, kind of stuff. But I think a lot of reps actually did buy into that, you know, we have this major potential budget problem.
Dean, what do you think?
Two interesting subplots, I think, that came out of this that I enjoyed learning about. The first was this the impact of the MET, the Medicaid Enhancement Tax. I remember that literally the day that the tax was declared unconstitutional, Senator Lou D'Alessandro, who supports casino gambling, immediately said, "Well, there's how we're gonna use casino money to fill the gap." And that argument resonated for some people clearly in the House as well. There is a sense, though, among legislators that they may be able to find some other kind of temporary path for that until we find out what the final resolution is from the court. So that was kind of interesting, whether this argument about losing that money is going to change people's support. I tend to believe that you know, support and opposition is fairly deeply rooted in principle, so it's hard to move people. The second thing that was interesting to me was there was this attempt or discussion of possibly amending the bill so that the Senate supports casino gambling but not decriminalization of marijuana. The House has supported decriminalization but not casino. So there was this idea that if you could amend the casino bill to include decrim and then send it back to the Senate would have to swallow decriminalization in order to get casinos, which I thought was just a great kind of legislative maneuver. It didn't happen, but I would love to see how that plays out.
And also, that would also have to go, if they did happen to pass it, it would go to the governor,
right,
who was also against
casinos, but you're going to have to decriminalize marijuana. It's a great kind of legislative tactic.
Yeah, go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, interestingly, a number of the lawmakers who switched their votes, people who were anti-casino in the last vote, pro-casino this vote, a number of them are people that are very strongly in favor of marijuana decriminalization. So they did bring a few people over for that reason. If it, you know, ultimately it wasn't enough, but people, I mean, that definitely happened if you just look at the list of lawmakers who changed their minds.
I also want to ask you folks about another bill on the House floor, I believe it was, and this is concerning paycheck equity. Jeff Feingold. Now, this passed the Senate unanimously, got discussed in the House this week, and the discussion got kind of interesting, if I could put it that way.
It actually has passed the House, and the House sent it back to the House Criminal Justice Committee because they were discussing penalties. And in that hearing, to go back for a second, paycheck equity is a big issue. It's a big issue nationally and in New Hampshire.
Democrats are
making
a big issue.
And basically, what it is at this point is a bill that would say an employer cannot punish an employee for sharing how much money he or she makes. So you know how much everybody makes. Well, the discussion came down to what the penalty should be, and there were some concerns that not the penalty, but the time period that an employee could file a complaint. And originally it was 1 year, and then they wanted to make it 3 years. And many of the reps on the Criminal Justice Committee were concerned that that was like a big window, and that it would really encourage it would be much more likely to have more lawsuits against employers and all that stuff. And it was a big discussion, and it's I'm not sure that I still think it's going to go through the bill. It's got a lot of support in both houses. But it was interesting to see how the concerns about, you know, the effect on employers this bill would have.
Yeah.
And they really do think it's litigation.
Well, and Jeff or Dean maybe wants to take this. There were some also comments made by one state rep about we don't need paycheck equity because women don't work as hard as men. That didn't go over very well.
Yeah, that was on the debate that on the floor. Yeah.
Right. Will Infantine is a Republican state rep, and he was on the floor of the legislature talking about paycheck equity and sort of segued into some comments. And you can watch this on YouTube if you're so inclined. And basically the essence of what he said was men make more money than women because they work harder, they take riskier jobs, they don't mind working overtime and weekends, etc. He tied it all to a Bureau of Labor Statistics report. I have not read that report, but you heard a lot of people booing on the floor, etc. And so he's been forced to back down a little bit, but sort of a kind of your classic misstep on the floor of the House.
All right. More after a short break. Stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. More of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. It's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather partly sunny. Chance of some showers for most of the day today. Clouding up this afternoon with showers in Coos County. Highs upper 50s to mid-60s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com. And Spiderweb Gardens in Tuftonboro, a garden center and farm, hosting their annual Mother's Day Open House weekend, May 10th and 11th, with new plants and classic favorites. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're covering some of the big stories that made headlines this week. Among them, the defeat, once again, of a casino bill in the House. Also, a bill making domestic violence a specific crime called Joshua's Law. We'll talk about that in a moment. And one Granite State woman's frustrations with Anthem's narrow network under the Affordable Care Act will get a hearing before the insurance department. We'll talk about that as well. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And of all of you, let's talk a little bit more about the Affordable Care Act. There were two big headlines about that this week. And Jeff Feingold, to you first, please. Roger Savini, the insurance commissioner, says his department we'll hear a complaint from a Rochester woman about the narrow network that her local hospital was not included in this network. Frisbee Memorial, I think it is. Give us the particulars of this, Jeff, or the context of this.
When the health insurance marketplace was set up in New Hampshire, New Hampshire doesn't exactly have the most competitive health insurance market at this point, and only one of the insurers took part in it. That's Anthem. And Anthem decided, as its way to cut costs, to keep costs low, that it would not include all providers in the network. So there was 26 hospitals, and it left out 10 of the hospitals. One of them was Frisbee. And Frisbee has been the most vocal in what they see as an unfair situation where they're not part of the network, and they have all these doctors who work with them, and the patients can't go to the doctors. Well, Frisbee challenged it, and basically the insurance commissioner in the original challenge says, well, you know, you don't have any standing to do this or whatever. But then they have a patient who filed specifically, said, I was hurt by this. If I had got the insurance, I couldn't go to my doctor. So now the insurance commissioner says, okay, well, listen, we'll hear this argument of yours. And that's the hearing that has been scheduled, I think, in a couple more weeks, on May 14th or something like that.
What does that mean, Jeff, that a hearing will be scheduled? I mean, it's great that her complaint will be heard, but what does that specifically mean in terms of how this whole narrow network, ACA, proceeds?
Well, I think it's a challenge, as they say, that they can't do it. And they're going to try to ask the insurance department in rulemaking, say we couldn't do this, but I don't believe that that's going to be the result. It's actually, as people who follow this, the other part of this whole story is that it's become very much a political issue, not just the idea of Obamacare nationally, but if you see all the candidates and elected officials, like from Carol Shayport to Scott Brown, going on saying, we have to do something about this. And I think there was legislation this session about, not preventing narrow networks. But the bottom line is, if you talk to people in healthcare, especially the health insurance, they said this is one way to keep costs down. It's basically the old-fashioned HMO type of thing.
Yeah, and Lisa Girton, the head of Anthem, said, hey, we asked our customers, and we said, you care more about having access to everyone, or do you care more about lower costs? And people said lower costs.
The real problem is that there's only one insurer. So when there's more insurers, which there will be in another few months, chances are that some of them are saying, we'll have a bigger network, we'll have everybody there, or others will just say, well, we'll have Frisbee in our network so you can get our insurance and go to Frisbee. And then that's what competition does. But right now there is no competition because there's only one insurer involved.
All right. I have another question for you, Dean, and you, Kathleen, but I also want to invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Again, it's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in the exchange, and we're looking at some of the big stories of the week, including this hearing about Anthem's narrow network under the Affordable Care Act. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Dean Spiliotis, as we talk about the Affordable Care Act, new numbers came out this week saying that 40,000 Granite Staters signed up for coverage on those health insurance marketplaces, a lot of them at the last minute. Karen Hicks with the group covering New Hampshire says she's thrilled. How do you interpret this?
Yeah, well, New Hampshire has been ahead of its targets all along. This goes back to the larger issue of the rollout of healthcare.gov last fall, all the problems they had with the rollout early on in October, November, December. They kind of rebooted it, and I think nationally now signups are up over 8 million, and they even met the 7 million target recently, which no one thought they were going to make. So, people are signing up. Republicans now are questioning how many of those folks have actually paid their premiums and are actually enrolled. Signing up is one thing. You actually have to pay your premium in order to be enrolled. So we don't know that. We're still kind of waiting to see what the mix of enrollees are and we know that the insurance companies are going to raise rates next time, but we don't know how much. It really depends on kind of the risk pool that has resulted from this. So New Hampshire has been ahead of targets all along. And this 40,000 figure, and almost half of that was in the last month. And that's human nature. People wait to the last minute to sign up. So I think that's all good news for supporters. But it's interesting. There's a recent UNH poll out that, you know, something like only 37% or 39% of New Hampshire rights support the law. So it's interesting. You know, people who have access are signing up, but there's still this kind of general perception that it's going to be costlier, and that at the end it's going to make affect your range of choices, as we were just discussing.
Kathleen, what are the politics of either these numbers or this hearing that's going to be held? Frustration over the narrow network.
Well, what I think is interesting is that Republicans, of course, have been trying to make Obamacare the 2014 issue. And I've always kind of wondered, will that stick all the way until November? We see a lot of politicians, Scott Brown comes to mind, who are really investing their entire campaign in the idea that people don't like Obamacare. So I think this week, both pieces of news are kind of interesting because on the one hand, the fact that the insurance department's going to hold this hearing on the narrow network plays very well into the hands of this anti-Obamacare sentiment.
Right. That's been a big critique.
Yeah, yeah, and this is affecting real people here in New Hampshire who can't go to the doctors that they want to go to. So that's great for Republicans. But at the same time, you have this information coming out that enrollment has gone way over expectations. So it's going to be interesting to see how Republicans react to that and those two kind of dual pieces of information coming out, one that's very good for Obamacare, one that's very bad for Obamacare. And I think it just goes to show how complicated this issue is and how it's not easy for Democrats and it's not easy for Republicans. And is this going to be an issue that people are going to want to keep hearing about all the way until November? Or are we going to hit a point when voters say, okay, start talking about something else, please?
Well, Jeff. Also, Scott Brown is apparently a little bit of a minefield himself because one of his opponents, Jim Rubins, in the Republican primary for Senate, has already said, well, how could Scott Brown be against Obamacare? He voted for Romney Care in Massachusetts. And you know that, and that's basically that is the model for Obamacare, and I'm not quite sure. I haven't heard an explanation from him yet on what the difference is. But I know that that Governor Romney had a difficult time on the campaign trail as the presidential candidate explaining, you know, what's the difference and why he would support that.
Do you want to jump in real quickly, Kathleen?
Yeah, and Scott Brown, I think, also got himself into a little bit of trouble on WMUR. I think it was last weekend. He was talking about Obamacare and saying that he liked a lot of the provisions that are in Obamacare, allowing kids to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26, covering pre-existing conditions, but that he wanted to get rid of Obamacare. And a lot of national news outlets have actually picked that up as, okay, what's his actual position here? He likes everything in it, but he says that he wants to get rid of it. So what's the solution? And that's going to be another big issue for Republicans. Are they going to be able to articulate something other than repeal, repeal, repeal?
Our phone number again on the exchange on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Well, speaking of the U.S. Senate race, Dean Spiliotis, there was some Twitter action in this race over the past week. The Huffington Post called New Hampshire's GOP Twitter account the crankiest it had ever seen. Now, just back up. What happened this week?
Well, there have been sort of for me, social media in general, Twitter in particular, but also Facebook, and it's really kind of become the new frontier in tactical warfare between the campaigns and between the political parties. And I think it's a mixed blessing because on the one hand, it allows for a timely dissemination of information and a timely reaction from opponents. On the other hand, it allows for the natural tendency, the human nature to kind of need to respond to everything, often in a very snarky way. So there's just a lot of noise on social media when it comes to politics. And so so there's been this kind of back and forth between Scott Brown and the Shaheen folks. But the most interesting one with the New Hampshire GOP was this recent dust-up over the Bruins. So Senator Jeanne Shaheen's office tweeted out a congratulatory tweet to this, for those of you who don't do Twitter, is a 140-character message congratulating the Bruins on moving on to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs against Montreal. And the NHGOP immediately tweeted back from their official account, Senator Shaheen doesn't know the first thing about hockey. Spare us your staff-authored tweets. And it led to a whole firestorm of kind of claims of, you know, Democrats saying there's a sexist comment that, well, you're saying Shaheen doesn't know about hockey because she's a woman, and Republicans and Jennifer Horne, the state GOP chair in particular, said, no, this is we're going after Shaheen for being an absentee senator. The whole episode was just basically ridiculous and unnecessary. It's just kind of, you know, one of my complaints about Twitter is it does lead to this sort of kind of often ill-conceived pettiness and snarkiness on both sides. And in this time in particular, I think the Republicans kind of stepped in it. But, you know, staff authored tweets. I don't know a member of Congress who doesn't have their staff people tweeting for them. You know, there are some who like doing it, but for the vast majority, they have staffers who do it. So I don't know why they decided to go after Shaheen on the Bruins. It was just petty and unnecessary.
Well, you could also argue the Republican Party, the state Republican Party, had a staff authored tweet. I mean, you know, it wasn't, you know, and I agree with Dean. I mean, I've been following this whole issue for a long time. You can get on a list of politicians on social media that's not exactly the best mix. They get into in a lot of trouble. But I have to say, this whole thing about sports, with politicians with sport and sports also, there's a long, you know, relationship between it. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I remember when Rudy Giuliani was running for president, who is a well-known fan of the New York Yankees, who was running for president in New Hampshire. And he was talking about how, you know, he was supporting the Red Sox in some kind of playoff or something. And as a Yankee fan, full disclosure, that was like one of the most embarrassing things a candidate could ever do. He's giving up his whole belief in what he thinks just to win a couple of votes. And, you know, the implication that Senator Shaheen has never seen a hockey game is just kind of absurd. If you live in New Hampshire, you can't avoid it.
Well, especially with her living on the seacoast, so close to UNH. Yeah, UNH, they've got a great hockey team there and so forth. All right. Well, another headline that caught our attention this week. The number for you to join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Join us as we cover some of the top stories of the week, from the casino bill to the Twitter wars in the U.S. Senate race here in New Hampshire. One more time, that number is 1-800-892-6477. All of you, to a bill that's of a much more serious nature than what we've just been talking about. Kathleen, human trafficking. The House passed a bill with stiffer penalties against human trafficking. And the reaction that a lot of people had was, what human trafficking? I mean, New Hampshire doesn't seem like that kind of a place. We think about that taking place in Africa or the Middle East or something.
Yeah, well, so first of all, what this bill does, and we have had we've had penalties for human trafficking in place in state law, but a few things that this bill does, it allows victims to sue their traffickers civilly for civil remedies. It also allows, if there are young women minors who are forced into prostitution through this, it allows so that they won't be charged for prostitution, which I guess wasn't part of our laws before. It also, if victims are tattooed during their trafficking, which apparently happens frequently, it allows for them to recover money to get those tattoos removed. So it adds some penalties. But there is that question. Is this happening here? And actually, during one of the hearings on the bill, David Goldstein, the police chief up in Franklin, he has been testifying in favor of this bill. And he told this story from, I think it was the 80s, and I don't remember all the details, but he was actually called to a case where there were two young girls who were kidnapped. And I think that he found them in Derry. They had somehow managed to escape, and they were in the storefront hiding under the counter from someone who had kidnapped them, who was planning on using them for human trafficking. So it's not like it doesn't happen here. I mean, of course, it's probably not happening here as much as it's happening in other places. But also earlier this year, there was a story of a young woman who was kidnapped for trafficking, and they actually found her in Salem. She wasn't from New Hampshire, and I don't think she was taken by anyone in New Hampshire, but somehow they found her in Salem. So it is something that happens, and the New Hampshire Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Domestic and Sexual Violence was really big behind this bill, saying we need to address this. We need to make sure that we have the right protections in place and make sure that we're caught up to where other states are at.
Yeah, it is something you're hearing more about. Mm-hmm. And not just teenage girls and maybe even boys, who knows. But Jeff Feingold, I think I also read something about workers in New Hampshire.
Yes.
Lower paid, maybe agriculture workers?
Agriculture workers and other industries also. It's a situation it's very disturbing, and that it actually is happening in New Hampshire. It is, like you said, something you read about internationally, but it is an international and a national issue, and it, as most things, it eventually comes home to New Hampshire. I have to say, one of the interesting things about this is that this bill was passed unanimously as opposed to the casino bill. And, you know, I think that really says how the gravity of the situation and how it's understood that it's something that should not be tolerated here. And apparently what they increased the potential penalty on that. Is that true, Kathleen? Because to up to 30 years in prison. And it's something that really it needs to be addressed. It's you don't want to have a gap in your legal system, in your justice system for you know, a crime such as this.
Okay. Well, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Another serious issue, Dean Spiliotis, a very sad story. It's hard to even talk about this. A law aimed at domestic violence, making domestic violence a specific crime called Joshua's Law. It's a very sad story behind this.
Yes, this is Joshua Savion, who was part of a murder-suicide. He was at either after-school care or some sort of program at the Manchester YMCA last fall. His father showed up, and it was a murder-suicide, killed his son, and then he took his own life. And Joshua's mother has campaigned tirelessly, and people have been lauding her for doing it, you know, saying it's amazing that she's been able to do this so soon after dealing with this tragedy. She's been quite strong throughout, and she was at the vote the other day to see this pass. Yeah, it doesn't create a new crime, but it reorganizes existing crimes so that you can have a crime for domestic violence specifically if it's committed with a family member or domestic partner. It used to be, you know, domestic crime was a simple assault, which is no different than a bar fight or some other kind of assault. So it's a way to kind of acknowledge that this is a very special set of circumstances. In theory, it will allow for the police to better respond and understand what they're dealing with if they look at somebody's criminal record or in dealing with a situation. So very impressive that Joshua's mother was able to push for this so soon after the tragedy. But it's a very, for anybody who has children, it's a very sad story.
Oh, absolutely. So, Kathleen, you've written about this, too. It's interesting.
Yes, and I think one of the most interesting statistics that I heard throughout this entire debate on the bill was that 50% of homicides and 92% of murder-suicides in New Hampshire are domestic violence related.
Wow, that's
so
a lot.
It's a very serious issue, and the advocacy groups, including the Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, they've been saying categorizing these crimes as domestic violence, charging people with domestic violence, will help them better understand the gravity of the problem here, gather more information about how and when and why it's happening, and also help respond to victims. So there was a lot of support for this. It passed, I think it passed unanimously in the Senate. There were only three people who voted against it.
In the House?
In the House, yep, three Republicans. I actually talked to one of them after, J.R. Hole from Dunbarton, and he said that he voted against it because he thought that the definition of intimate partners was too wide open, and he didn't think that it would be fair that someone could get charged with domestic violence after hurting someone that they went on one date with. I'm not sure if that's an explanation that it's going to fly with a lot of people, but that was his reason for voting against it.
Okay. Well, very interesting and sad, sad conversation. Something a little bit happier coming up. A new Gallup survey finds that 3/4 of Grand Estaters are very happy to live here, have no intention of moving. Do you fit that category or not? What would you have said if Gallup surveyed you? Let us know. Coming up.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, Senate Republicans block a vote to increase the federal minimum wage. The Labor Department releases its April jobs report. Then, Iraqis turn out for their first nationwide elections since the U.S. troop withdrawal. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
This morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Edward Jones, a financial services firm serving individuals and business owners. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, a member of SIPC. And the W.S. Badger Company, a certified benefits corporation, holding an open house tomorrow with tours of the new facility, 768 Route 10, Gilsum, New Hampshire, badgerbomb.com. 9:40, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, we kick off a week-long series on higher education called A Matter of Degrees. That kicks off Monday on The Exchange and on NHPR. Today, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. You can join us by calling 1-800-892-6477. Your thoughts, questions, comments as we wrap up some of the top stories of the week, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. And before I go to our listeners, a couple emails coming in. I did want to ask all of you about a new Gallup survey that caught our attention on the exchange. Jeff Feingold, I think I'll throw this to you first. 3/4 of Granite Staters, Gallup found, are very happy to live here. That's higher than the national average. I think Connecticut, for example, 50% of people in Connecticut said, yeah, if I had the chance to move, I would. Only 1/4 of Granite Staters said, if I had the opportunity to move, I would.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because, you know, when you look at the numbers, New Hampshire is, you know, its population is not declining, but it's not really, you know, growing that well, which is part of the problems with our state's the economy. But New Hampshire, they talk about the quality of life, and apparently that's what people like about New Hampshire is just being here. There's not much. It was one of the more interesting things, though, is the idea of who they talked to. They said it was 600 people. We don't know if they were young people, older people, and as we know, New Hampshire has had a big issue with keeping younger people here. And it would be interesting, actually, at some point, if they could survey younger people to find out how they felt about, you know, if this would match the same results. But it's not a bad thing when people like living in a state. I mean, and surprising thing is about Connecticut. I mean, that's not such a bad place.
But it was interesting. Maine was also similar to New Hampshire, where roughly only 1/4 of the people said that they would want to leave. So, you know, maybe, as we were saying, maybe it would be interesting to see kind of the breakdown by age to see if this is just a bunch of happy retirees or if this was
accurate portrayal. It says 600 adults, so presumably
if it's a random survey, it should be all right.
But. It should be, yeah. But the thing is really in the end, you know, it really does raise issues to me. Like, okay, so what is it that you like about New Hampshire? They just say they like it. It's one of the best places in the best state in the country and all this stuff. But what is it? And that's always been a discussion among politicians as well. You know, they talk about the New Hampshire advantage. Well, what is the New Hampshire advantage? So
as a good reporter, you wanted to know more.
Exactly.
Well, just so folks know, again, it's from Gallup. So that's a reputable survey organization, to be sure. The other states, Montana, Hawaii, Maine, Oregon, and Texas, were fewer than 1 in 4 residents wanted to leave their home state. So how would you have responded if Gallup had surveyed you? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in. This person did not give a name. They say, ask people if they like each part of the ACA, Affordable Care Act. They say yes. People like the ACA far better than Obamacare, showing they don't know what they're talking about. This person says, big money is throwing tons of money and advertising into defaming and lying about the ACA. Faux news, the Koch brothers, Alec, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So here, Kathleen is a supporter of the ACA or Obamacare. Getting into some of the survey responses about this law, speaking of surveys, and how it's kind of hard to really suss out how people feel.
Yeah, and actually that email reminds me, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel that did a skit on his show at some point in the last 6 months maybe, where he has correspondents or whatever from his show go out and they ask people, what do you prefer, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? And I think they're out of maybe 6 or 7 people that they showed, there was only one person that stopped and said, those are the same thing. So a lot of people out there don't maybe don't understand that they're the same thing. And I agree with the email that there has been a lot of negative advertising characterizing this as Obamacare. I think that, at this point, some Democrats and I think even the president have, you know, been calling it Obamacare.
The president himself said he liked
it. Yeah, and some of that probably has to do with the fact that they see this negative advertising blitz and they want to turn a little bit of a, you know, they want to connect the Affordable Care Act with Obamacare. But I do think that it is interesting to try and figure out how people really feel because they don't like this broad government takeover as a whole. Some people might not, but when you ask them about the provisions that are in it, who's going to say that they don't think people with pre-existing conditions should be covered? You're going to be hard-pressed to find someone who's going to say that. But then if you ask them if they like it as a part of this whole scheme of Obamacare, they're going to say no. So I think there is misinformation out there. There is confusion. And because it's such a big law, I don't think it's as easy as just saying, I like it or I don't. I think you really have to break it down and look at the different pieces
like
of
describing
it.
An elephant, I think there's an old saying about that. Dean, real quick to you and
sure.
Jeff.
You know, the UNH data I referenced shows that there is a perception problem, and that's a political failure on the part of the administration and on Democrats. It is a very large bill, but the sort of the reality of how people conceptualize policy are these sort of general names like Obamacare, or you can pick any other kind of policy that has a name associated. So, you know, it may be that people, it is, you know, there is data all over the map in terms of what people like and what they don't like. But, you know, these sort of general survey questions show that there is kind of a perception problem for Democrats. The question, as I think Kathleen mentioned earlier, is whether or not that's going to be the sort of the silver bullet for Republicans in the fall.
Yeah, if you remember, you know, this whole idea of what of people being informed well enough on these issues. If you remember back before the Affordable Care Act was passed, when you had all these Tea Party protests and people had signs that said, get your government hands off my Medicare. So, you know, there's a little confusion there on the healthcare system. But the other thing I wanted to say was I think what's really hurting the Republicans in this nationally is the is this whole absence of an alternative plan. Because if you hear, it's not just Scott Brown, but there are a lot of Republican members of Congress and others nationally who say, oh, we like this idea of keeping 26-year-olds on it. We like the idea of having of ensuring pre-existing conditions, but they still haven't come up with an alternative. And I think that is in the end is going to play against them because all they're saying is no. And as Kathleen was saying, it's such a big law. There's certain things that people like about it.
Well, I asked a moment ago how folks might respond if Gallup had surveyed them on this sort of happy to be here index. And Jen from Newmarket responded to that. She says, I love New Hampshire. Born here, raised here, left for a few years, came back. She says, however, my significant other and I talk frequently about how we realize we can't afford to buy a home here, in particular in the area we would like to live. Property taxes too high, Jen says. Perhaps if New Hampshire were to implement a state tax and the property taxes were lower, we might reconsider. Now, Jeff, this is an issue that I know you guys have looked at, the cost of housing, the
absolutely.
Property taxes and so forth.
Which
so.
Actually might explain why there's so many people who don't want to live in Connecticut because housing there is a lot worse than here. But it is an interesting issue that she raises. But one of the other points is I would bet there are a lot of people who like living in New Hampshire because there's no income tax. So it's a complicated issue. But the housing does affect a lot of things, and it has affected a lot about why people why young people aren't able to stay here because they can't find affordable housing. And it's, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, and we did a show a couple weeks back, real interesting, based on some new research about New Hampshire's housing supply, how it's kind of like that pair of pants you haven't tried on in a couple of years. It doesn't quite fit anymore. So if folks want to look back at that, we did do that show a couple weeks ago. Dean Spiliotis, I did want to ask you about a very New Hampshire story that has gone national. This is called Duckgate. New York Magazine called this the best political scandal of the year. Now, I'm not sure how they figure that, Dean, because it's not even June yet, but why does New York Magazine think that this is such a delicious political
scandal?
Well,
basically, two public officials have been taken down as a result of one of them running over and killing, I believe, five ducks. This was the state representative, David Campbell, a while back at the Crown Plaza in Nashua. There's a duck pond right in the midst of the various entrances and exits. I think he went the wrong way and ran over five ducks, and some other people called the police. Now, Campbell said that he had only had, I think, a glass of wine and one other drink, and he was not intoxicated, but he called Nashua Police Commissioner Thomas Pappas, a friend of his, Pappas took care of him. I think even took him home, and then contacted the police on his behalf the next day. As a result of that, David Campbell, the sort of fallout of that, Campbell he was charged with illegal taking of waterfowl for killing the ducks. Campbell has said he's not going to run for re-election. Thomas Pappas resigned as Nashua Police Commissioner. You know, sort of the classic tack gate onto any scandal, and you have Duckgate. So it sounds silly, but on the other hand, for you know people who are concerned about wildlife and that Campbell acted in a way that was inappropriate in how he handled it, you know, it was serious enough to have repercussions. And so,
well, like we used to say in Washington, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Yeah, there's just a lot of, you know, it basically kind of had the appearance that he was, you know, sort of being helped. He was helped avoiding more serious consequences. You know, we'll never know whether or not he was intoxicated. And, you know, that he got a break because of his friendship with Thomas Pappas. So interesting, you know, local. But yeah, sometimes, you know, now in the age of the internet and social media, the most sort of local stories, if they strike a note with people, go viral very quickly.
But on a national, on New Hampshire level, that's it points to the fact that, you know, these are, you're an elected official and you really have to watch your behavior in public. It's people are watching you. And it, you know, this is not, it wasn't just it wasn't a minor thing that he did. What, you know, I mean, people making fun of it, and I know I'm one of them. But, you know, it's if you think about it, this was not a this was irresponsible behavior, no matter how you cut it.
All right. Let's go back to our listeners. And the number for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, your thoughts, questions, comments, still have time to squeeze you in on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Kevin's calling from Bedford. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Laura, love your show. Long-time listener.
Good.
One of your panel members said he doesn't understand why people might not like Connecticut and why they're moving out. I had the unfortunate experience of having to live there for a couple of years because I lost my job here in New Hampshire. And the thing with Connecticut and a lot of the states where people are moving out of is there's too much government, there's too many taxes, there's too many regulations. And when you look at New Hampshire or Texas or anyone on the list of people who want to stay, Maine, you know, they're more for the local guy, they're more for state control. They're, you know, live free or die. We have less government, you know, no income tax, you know, no sales tax. And that's all in the New Hampshire, if you will. That's why people want to live here and stay here.
So in addition to the beautiful landscape, the political culture, you're saying, Kevin, is attractive to people here.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the people who stay in Connecticut are ones who want the services and are willing to pay the taxes.
Okay.
You know, but I take my own garbage to the dump. I love doing that. I don't want to pay someone.
You see your neighbors and do some of those swaps, too, that they have at the dump. Thanks a lot for calling in, Kevin. It's good to hear from you. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. By the way, this question of how you would have responded if Gallup had surveyed you about how happy you were to live, you are to live in New Hampshire, has generated a couple emails. Here's one. This person did not give a name. They say, I'm a native and love New Hampshire and want to stay as long as there's no casinos. Kathleen Ronan, we talked about that a lot earlier. This was an argument, right, that this is going to ruin the New Hampshire brand, our beautiful quality of life, our family-friendly image, and so forth.
Yep. A lot of the people that are anti-casino are anti-casino for that very reason. They think this is New Hampshire. We do things differently. We don't need to be like the other states that get large-scale casinos in here to solve our problems. It's going to take away from our tourism industry, which we all know is a huge part of our economy here in New Hampshire. So that's been a big concern. Another concern is that if people are spending their money in casinos, they're not spending their money at our local establishments, at our entertainment venues, at our ski resorts or wherever. So I think that, this email really hits on an argument that for a lot of anti-casino state reps, they're never going to change their mind and they're never going to be for casinos because they worry.
No matter how sweet the bill is.
Exactly, because they worry about what it would do to the New Hampshire brand.
Yeah, and that's is why the tourism industry, for the most part, is against this bill because they understand the brand of New Hampshire, which is sometimes gets confusing because people aren't always aware of the New Hampshire brand.
Everybody defines it differently depending on what they like.
And they say, yeah, exactly.
Some people say tax-free shopping. Some people say hiking.
Oh, New Hampshire, is that near Vermont?
Or New Hampshire, is that Vermont? I've gotten that too.
Or they did that on NBC that time, yeah.
There was one really nice New Hampshire story that I wanted to follow up on with you, Dean, that, again, got our attention this week. The computer language BASIC turned 50, a venerable birthday. Turns out it was invented in New Hampshire at Dartmouth College. Who knew Dean Spiliotis? I'm guessing you knew.
I knew actually from my time there, yes. But as we heard in the opening, it was invented in 1964 by John Kemeny, who went on to become president of Dartmouth in the 70s, and also another professor, Thomas Kurtz. And, you know, I'm what in technology world is referred to as a late adopter. So my main – this particular program was popular in the mid-70s and the 80s. So my main recollection of BASIC was trying to avoid taking computer courses. I would see – in the early 80s, I would see all my classmates with these thick manuals that said, like, BASIC on it. BASIC stands for Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instructional Code. And, you know, what's interesting about this is it really was designed for an ease of use. So to allow for kind of general computing. You know, it used to be prior to that that you had to custom write code for whatever task you wanted to do. This is really an early language to kind of allow you to work, you know, more generally in the math and sciences. And in a way, it sort of was an early computer language for personal computing. But it was big mainly in the 70s and 80s. But that is my main recollection, was trying to avoid having to study that stuff in college because the manual looked very intimidating.
Yeah, well, it was cool to find out, though, that it was invented at Dartmouth.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Actually, I'm old enough, being the old person in the room, to remember the days when people walk around with these huge punch cards, the kids who were taking computer classes, which is, you know, those definitely were the geeks back then. And they'd have these huge, thick wads of punch cards. And this is what BASIC did, was you didn't have to use punch cards anymore.
We used to make Christmas wreaths out of those punch cards.
There you go. Well, you're not as old as you look.
Anyway.
Forget it. I just blew that one.
You know what? I think we'll take one more call. How about that, Jeff? We'll pull you out of the hole.
But the thing about BASIC that's really great is that even I could understand how to use it.
All right. Let's take one more call. Jody's waiting in Loudoun. Hi, Jody. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks. I'm a first-time caller. I live in Loudoun. I'm 46 years old, have 3 kids, and if I were to be asked that Gallup poll, I would most certainly say I love New Hampshire. I grew up in Massachusetts. I came to college up here in New Hampshire, fell in love with it, went back to Massachusetts, did grad school down in Virginia. My folks have a place in Florida. I've been to Colorado and California, but you could not pay me to live anywhere else but New Hampshire.
And you've got access to a bunch of other places, it sounds like. Jody, thank you so much for calling in. It's great to hear from you. Good luck with those 3 kids.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, and all of you, I just want to let everybody know that next week on The Exchange, we'll be kicking off a week-long examination of higher education as part of NHPR's overall series called A Matter of Degree. Some real interesting stuff we'll be digging into next week. Kathleen, how about you?
The Senate's going to be voting on a raise to the state's minimum wage. Probably not going to get through. Senate Finance voted against it 4-2. So it's probably not going to make it through the Senate, but we know that this is going to be a big 2014 issue. We just saw a minimum wage increase blocked in the U.S. Senate. So political issue, definitely people's votes are going to be haunting or helping them come election day.
Jeff, how about you?
I'm going to take a closer look this over the next week at what's going on with the New Hampshire construction industry. I've been following this very closely, and over the last few months, there seems to be it's taken a negative turn, and just looking at some of the numbers. And I'm
okay.
Looking closer.
Yeah, we haven't looked at that in a long time. Yep. That should be interesting. Dean.
American Idol. If Alex Preston from Mount Vernon makes the top 3, he gets the New Hampshire home visit, which will be a big event, a national event. So we're going to be watching to see how he does. A continuing parade of potential 2016 Republican candidates. Some recent polling data shows that it's absolutely wide open on the Republican side. So I'm kind of watching how that's developing over the next month or so.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for being here. Joining us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, as part of NHPR's series on higher education called A Matter of Degrees, we look at some of the big questions, including why is college so expensive and how families try to cover the costs. Also, we'll examine what we mean by college ready and who's responsible for that process, and the idea of career ready. Are new grads prepared for the working world? Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Beaver Productions presenting Michael Bublé in concert at the Verizon Wireless Arena in Manchester on Friday, July 11th at 8 p.m. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. And Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and not-for-profit organizations online at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at NHPR.org.
WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The U.S. adds 288,000 jobs in April. That brings the unemployment rate down to 6.3%, the lowest in more than 5 years. The Department of Education, for the first time, releases a list of colleges under investigation.